A positive news network?
What?
Welcome to the Joyous Expansion Podcast. I'm your host, Brett Dupree, scouring the globe to bring you stories of courage, passion, and resilience. If I could sum up this podcast into one word, I would use empathy. Now let's get inspired.
Welcome to the Joyous Expansion Podcast. I am your host once again, Brett Dupree. I have a wonderful interview with you today with a very inspiring man, Sujit Lalwani. He has his own network of positive news. How cool is that? That is something that is needed today, especially since negative news dominates. That's life, really. There's a reason why negative news dominates, and that's because people spend on emotion. And speaking of spending on emotion, this is the part of the podcast where I am vulnerable about myself, because if I can't expect my guest to be vulnerable if I am not vulnerable myself. This last week has been interesting in certain regards. Number one, on Friday, I finally did a cacao ceremony, which was so good. I have missed my cacao ceremonies, drinking that thermal cacao, listening to the sound baths of the crystal bowls. Yes, I know how woo-woo that sounds, but I love it. Group meditation is my jam. I haven't done it in a year, and I think it showed. I think a lot of the reason why I've kind of been falling lately is just the lack of getting into a group and actually meditating. Lightworker Toastmasters is really good for me. Group is going amazing, by the way. Little bit of segment tangent, and talk about lightworkers. Our dues are due in October, and right now we have 32 members, which is super freaking exciting. We have so many members, and I believe we should be having two more people pay and one more person joining soon, which will bring us up to 35, which was my initial goal for the club. And to reach that in just over a year is super awesome, and the energy, everything's about that is great. So I love Lightworker Toastmasters. However, I get joy there. I don't get clarity. And when I'm in a group meditation, I get clarity, and I was doing that for a month, at least monthly, and that helped keep me sane, especially when I was going through the dark times of a couple years ago. And in the last year, I haven't really been doing that much. Combination of Toastmasters getting in the way and the Modern Mystery School having less Egyptian meditation has taken its toll on me, and I think it's part of the reason why my health has deteriorated, because there's just something about the clarity that I receive when I go to a group meditation. That's something that's good for me. And I think that's a lot of part in life. One of the things I talk about in my book is one of the keys of joy is to find your placebo. What is the thing in life that for you, going to a group meditation might be a form of torture? You might not, you think, I don't believe in this woo-woo crap and I don't like being around people. I'd rather go off into the woods and meditate. Do that. I'm not saying you shouldn't. There's no one way to meditate. There's no one way to rejuvenate. Mine just happens to be being in a crowd of people feeling awesome. So when I go to the Lightworker Toastmasters, I rejuvenate the joy part of me. But the clarity part, I do best when I am in a group and meditating. When I'm meditating alone, it just doesn't have the oomph that it has when I'm alone. That's just me. And yeah, so what I've been thinking about the group meditation is really taking my life up a notch and stop kind of pussyfooting around. I don't know a better word than pussyfoot. I don't even know, is that a dirty word? Pussy willow foot? I just can't tiptoe around and really work on myself and stop this one part about myself that I've been talking about, I probably have talked about, but my desire to escape when things are hard. When I think about my entire life, any time where something has gone wrong, 9 times out of 10, it's because I'm just not dealing with it. That I'm just kind of retreating in my mind and body and soul and not just going after it head on. Because a lot of ways I escape make things worse. I eat more, which of course will make me unhealthier and fatter. Or I spend more, which makes me feel broker. And when I feel broke, I spend more. And I just spend more, and a lot of times it's on food. So I don't even have anything to show for it. I mean, I really even think of the time when I almost went bankrupt. Well, I did go bankrupt. The time I went bankrupt, I should say almost homeless. The time I went bankrupt, that time would have been better if I hit it head on, actually budgeted. I would have probably not needed to borrow money from my grandpa, and I also probably wouldn't have gotten scammed by Yelp. Don't want to go into that. Just know that I fell into the Yelp scam when I didn't have any money at all. And those people are relentless. They kind of... You know, when you're stressed about money, you don't make good decisions. I know I didn't. And there are plenty of studies that show that. That when you feel that stress and that desperation, that's just the perfect time to scam you. Because, and honestly, 9 times out of 10, especially if you grew up poor and you don't have that rich safety net and you feel hopeless, your chances of having someone take advantage of that is increased. And that's just life, you know? That's just the way it is. And that happened to me. So I don't want to do that anymore. And I know I've said that multiple times. And I'm getting better in my relationship. I haven't retreated yet on if things got, like, I've had the conversations I felt I needed to have. And when my girlfriend brings things up to me, I accept them and don't retreat back into myself, or at least I work on that. A lot of that is just awareness. I was talking to my friend Karen about that in those two books. I don't remember. I'm not looking it up. But basically, understanding your attachment style. And once I understood my attachment style, it helped me out a lot. So, yeah, I'm going to start trying to hit this world head on. The number one thing I want to do with that is I'm going to be relaunching the Church of Awesome. I kind of started that, but didn't really. It was on someone else's network. And I kind of let that as an excuse to kind of not do it as often or fill up my plan. So now that that network's going away, the Seven Stones is no more, I'm going to be relaunching the Church of Awesome under me and just putting it on a different podcast. I guess I could change this to the Joyous Expansion Network and have the Church of Awesome be a part of this. I wonder which one would be better. That would be cheaper. I do like cheaper. Do I want to spend $12 a month extra, or do I want this just to be my network, one where I do interviews and one where I give advice? That's a good question. I didn't really think of that. I wonder what's better. Anyway, I don't know why that this popped in my head, but I'm gonna start doing that. I'm starting doing live on Sundays like I promised myself I would, and I will go out and work on being a best me that I can be. I'm also starting a 365-day health journaling challenge on YouTube. I have my own channel that I created. It is, I believe it's called Awesome Health Journey. I already have 2 subscribers. How fun is that? Of course, it's my girlfriend. But yeah, Awesome Health Journey. So if you look up Awesome Health Journey, you should see my smiling face. So if you want to follow that. And yeah. Right now, I am excited, I'm pushing forward, and the secret's going to be, can I keep this up? That's what I'm working on. Hitting things head on, taking life by the balls, and smashing the life testicles between my hands. That was probably the worst analogy I have ever come up with. I wonder if this one has to be explicit. Anyway, if you want to talk about inspirational, I want to talk about someone who really did take life by the cojones. Sujit Lalwani. Mr. Sujit Lalwani is the founder of IU, Inspiration Unlimited, a global inspirational media. He is the author of Life Simplified, which is a simple coffee table read solving complex problems of life for youngsters 14 to 28 years of age. He was awarded the Connecting the World Award at One Life Fully Lived conference organized in 2015 in Sacramento, California. He was a speaker at One Young World Conference in 2012 in Pittsburgh and has been a returning ambassador of One Young World since 8 years. Now here is my interview with the inspirational Sujit Lalwani. Hello, Sujit, and welcome to my podcast.
Oh, it's a pleasure being with you, Brett. I am looking forward to what we can together, you know, bring for listeners.
You said you've been an entrepreneur about 16 years in your life?
Yes. I would say that I started my career with sales and marketing when I was 18, and that was about 4 years. And when I was 22, I kind of put my company in place. So I would say that it's been about 11 years being an entrepreneur, but yes, 15 years in sales and marketing. The sales and marketing career initially was more of an independent associate. We more felt like the control as an entrepreneur, and all of it was more like you do it for yourself. I coded as 15 years of entrepreneurship journey.
Got you started in wanting to become an entrepreneur.
One of the things that really inspired me as I grew up was looking at my dad and how he worked as an entrepreneur. He started a small business, moved down to a city called Bengaluru in India. And we were otherwise from a small town in a state called Rajasthan in India. And he had moved to Bengaluru and he started his own business. He started dealing with false ceiling materials, plaster of Paris and all of that. And he set up a business all by himself. He started employing people. And as I saw him grow and have a little bit of control over his time as well, while there were days when he worked really hard, I mean, weeks together, maybe sometimes even months. There were other days when he had all the time for the family. And as I saw him do that, there was an inclination right from the early stages of life. Even I would get into business one point of time. As I grew up and I learned more about entrepreneurs, read their stories, how they built very successful companies and how exciting it is to lead a creation. And given that I had this whole inclination towards even creating something that would be lasting beyond your lifetime. So all of this kind of synergized and moved me to decide that I'm going to be an entrepreneur, though I didn't know what business I would eventually end up setting up. I was kind of very interested in the very fact that I would be involved with business entrepreneurship that would make me a strong problem solver. Eventually, I would figure my way out to what I would want to be doing.
I'm curious, what is the culture of entrepreneurship in India?
Our culture of entrepreneurship in India is kind of diverse. I mean, you have small businesses, you have medium, segment enterprises, you have some very serious entrepreneurs, and of late, it's been the whole startup buzz for the last 10 years. So there's a lot of venture capital, angel funding coming in. While, there were a lot of public regulations that didn't favor strength and growing up of business, it's in this era, at this point in time, probably if you were to sit down with the millennials, every other person is so kicked about wanting to be an entrepreneur simply because you could address a pain point and solve the problem of so many people. So this whole problem-solving spirit, I think, is forming or beginning to form a strong base for the entrepreneurship culture in India.
What problem are you looking to solve?
It's right from the very beginning. I think I have felt that there's so much positivity and positivity media that's lacking in the world. And I always felt every single morning when I woke up and I took the newspaper and I started reading, there's so much crime, politics, and there's news about all around everything, very little bit of positive news. So I always had this vision, I would like to do something that brings up positivity media in, in the world. And that's how Inspiration Unlimited, that is IU, got in place about 7.5 years ago. And we've been doing good. We have kind of, with all our distribution channels and channel partners, we have a potential reach of almost close to 100 million downloads that all of these people offer to us, with possibly an active readers base of almost about 10 million plus people. So that's how far we've gotten so far. But yes, I would like that anyone who wakes up and says, hey, listen, I would want to go down to a platform or a website that's 100% positive and no gossips otherwise about any negative news content that's otherwise going to put my energies down, I think they should look up to IU and come down to IU and spend enough time that could give them the kick for the day and then they could get going. That's what I'm addressing.
Were you always a positive person growing up?
I would say that having been exposed to times where resources were limited. So our family had a 10 by 10 feet, that is about 100 square feet of home. And we were like seven of us, or maybe a little before that, we were 12 of us. We were a joint family with my father's brother and our other cousin siblings, all of us staying together. And there would be summer holidays and some more of our far cousins would actually come down and we would be almost 20 people in that little house. So having seen lack of resources and how everybody being together as a family still was very positive, were quite hopeful about every other event that came by. Every new buy in the house was like a celebration. When we learned all of those things of how, you could have big dreams, have great goals, though there are challenges in life, you could still put up with it and celebrate every single day and look forward to every next coming day. And I think that made a big difference in how a positive mind sort of shaped up very early on in my life. And I think, yes, optimistic and hopeful I was from the early on, and I could see a lot more positivity in the things I saw. When I started growing up and my perspective enhanced, I saw that people couldn't see solutions in a lot of situations where I could see. So maybe, yes, I was lucky. I was lucky, and yes, from quite an early times, probably a very thought-provoking question, but I must appreciate that.
Was there a time where your positive outlook was challenged?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I mean, early on, it was very hopeful, cheerful, when all of the pressure of the buck stops on my table wasn't there. The growing up years as an adolescent, maybe those times, I don't think they were challenged that often. But as I moved to times where I thought I need to take accountability of building up and starting to create my own financial growth, income, and then build my organization, even start my own company. When I started doing all of that, and probably then to take responsibility of my family and all of that, I think there were times when you're challenged and you have much bigger goals than you can actually take on. Deadlines are strict, kind of impose targets for yourself, and you're learning so much more than you think, you know, you have taken up on your table, and you find yourself incompetent sometimes for delivery. So all of those situations, I think, put you in a time where you're really challenged and you don't really stay that hopeful at times. And then those doubts start lurking in whether this is really going to happen. You know, all of these targets going to get achieved? Am I even going to make it to the destination or creation of the dream that I'm really dreaming? Even the negative feedback kind of puts a setback sometimes. As you grow up and as you're putting your footsteps forward, all the negative feedback at the beginning, which does not really sound like a challenge that you could take on, you're expecting more of encouragement. And as you start dealing and learning how to deal with rejections and disappointments or probably discouraging statements, around those times, you know, doubts begin to lurk. But I think if you have a stronger positive outlook and you're more hopeful and you're optimistic, I think there's a battle between the two. Most often in my life, yes, I tried to win the battle on the side of being hopeful and positive, but I wouldn't say at all, Brett, that I wasn't challenged by the doubts and the mindsets that were not so positive at times, and they were almost closed doors in front of me. So yes, I would say there are times when you just kind of lose everything, and sometimes you just say, hey, let me have a good sleep, wake up the next day and think about it.
There's a time you actually lost everything?
Oh yes, I would say when I was in my sales and marketing career early on for 5 years, I moved off my college. I thought I'll take that as my full-time career and a long-term livelihood and a career for myself. But I saw that one of the situations, quite unforeseen, the organization kind of toppled because I wasn't the owner of the organization at that point in time. And there were a lot of my business associates otherwise who were a part of my organization as well. And we were collectively, selling the product, and the company had, the business had to come to a halt because we had to stop the operations for some time. And it was almost like, you know, owning a manufacturing plant and sitting on top of its leadership position and then almost seeing like the plant is going to be shut down. That time, yes, I would say that there was a massive change in direction needed. I had to figure my way out, you know, and I had to help the people associated with me to figure their ways out and make a decision of what's going to be next, because we knew that this isn't going to continue. This is something we can't pursue longer. Another basket that I had put my eggs into. I knew I had to figure a whole new way out. And that point, I would say it was terrific loss, especially of the dreams that were seen already. Put a pause altogether. Put a new vision in place. At that transition, I think, was the most challenging one. And I think such times have repeated, of course. I wouldn't say they haven't happened again, but in different patterns, I would say, or in different formats or in different styles, they do come again. But one reference in your past, and you look ahead and say, hey, listen, if I could pull through then, I can pull through now. And then your second reference happens. And then the third time you're like, hey, if I could pull it through then, I can still pull it through this one. Maybe that's when I really learned one of these phrases. One of my mentors, I mean, I had several mentors. I would look up to a lot of people sometimes. I found good qualities in people, I would say. I would learn from this person. I would learn from their qualities and good qualities. And then I would have more conversations with them, and I would learn a lot of how they deal with things. So one of my mentors ended up teaching me that, hey, listen, just remember one thing, this too shall pass. So that gave me strength all the time. Whenever there were very tough times, I would say, hey, this too shall pass, and I'll figure my way out. And one day things will be much better than they are right now. So I did have such occasions, Brett.
One thing we like to do in the United States of America is to kind of prop up our supposed self-made millionaires or make people are quote unquote self-made. So it sounds to hear that you got a lot of mentors. So in India, do they share that idea of people should do it upon themselves, pull themselves up by their bootstraps? Or do you guys encourage getting mentors and partners?
I think there's a mix of both. But I think over a period of time of me growing up in my journey, I think I've come to a conclusion that it's very, very pivotal that we have mentors. And of course, we do have kind of culture that if somebody is seriously mentored and they feel very comfortable and free to actually acknowledge their mentors as well. So a large part of our culture, yes, definitely encourages having a mentor, and mentors really are free to actually coach the other people and empower them and grow them up in their field. Should somebody reach out to them? It's not like everybody who's made it to successes is by default deciding to mentor everybody else, but there are a lot of people that I see around that have made it to good position. And then, you know, they engage a lot through various organizations and foundations to actually mentor others. And there are enough people who get mentored and look up to having mentors. And that kind of a culture is around in India pretty much, right?
So when it came to being an entrepreneur, what were your biggest mental roadblocks in selling and marketing and creating your own business?
I think one of the biggest roadblocks for me was to take my business as a business. A lot of times I would get more emotional than I stuck to my business as business. That I think was one of the strongest roadblocks at the very onset. Sometimes when I knew that I was bleeding or that particular area was not performing well or we weren't driving enough sales, but I was really emotional about that particular vertical or idea, I would keep driving it further and further, but the losses would keep increasing. Maybe we would bleed more than we would have or we should have. And I think that was one of the early roadblocks. And I learned through failures itself that once you have an idea and that's really not taking by, and if given sufficient time, efforts and experiments, and your feedback loop has also kind of done some course correction for itself, you have to set apart that particular line of direction and see to it that you are looking for the next opportunity of growth, unless and until it's an idea or a vision that all that you want to be building, but then you didn't get your business model right as your course correction went by and you stuck to a business model, but that business model isn't performing, but you stick to the whole business model and the vision simply because you're emotional about it. I think that was one of my strongest roadblocks, Brett.
Came to starting Inspirational Unlimited magazines. What were your first steps? How did that go along?
Me and my brother, we were having a discussion one day and he was like, oh my God, there's so much negativity in the newspapers. You're not kind of finding so much of positive news. There's no media that kind of takes leadership in doing this. At least a platform, at least an online website that covers a lot of positive news or at least publishes a lot of positive articles and positive alone. Maybe something like that should come up. I'm very disappointed that nothing like that exists. So when he said all of that, I felt it's high time that I stop blaming and take accountability for doing something. And maybe, you know, when people tried, they failed or probably just didn't click for them. Maybe we should do and see what are the challenges. So the very next day, I came to my team and said, we were running a training company back then. And the name of the training company was Inspiration Unlimited. And that was IU. That's largely because I was a motivational speaker and I would deliver speeches and come back. And people would find it so impactful that they would come back a couple of years or 3 years later to me and say that those 2 hours were very life-changing for me. And the impact is so deep that I still carry that positive energy with me. And every time I feel low, I just close my eyes and recall your speech. So when first of these feedback came, I thought probably that's very encouraging, that's sweet of them. But then when those feedback repeated, I felt, okay, let me understand this as this is unlimited inspiration. This is lasting for a very long time in each of these people. So let me name my company as Inspiration Unlimited. And that's how it started as a training company. But then the very day me and my brother had this conversation, I came back to my team and I said, we are launching an online media because I didn't have money to go for a print media at that point in time and neither the expertise to do that. Given that the vision has sparked, given that the idea had come in and given that that conversation had happened, I said, this is still a part of the vision that I can feel so deep that this is something I will surely take leadership and accountability to do. Now, no matter how difficult or how less informed I was at that point in time, or how difficult it might get as the future unfolds, because I might have to take a lot of education very newly because this was something not of my domain. I still took the challenge and the leadership and said, listen, we're going to launch this online media and we're going to do it. And then first question the team said, everybody had was, how are we going to do it? And I said, let's do one thing, research a little bit on what other online media exists. And that's when I found that there were these blogs and there were these e-magazines. And I said, we're not going to be a blog alone. We're going to be an e-magazine. Largely, there was still no very strong differentiation between them, but the positioning was still different. So I said, e-magazine is the positioning we need. We're going to come across as an online media. We're not going to be a blog alone. We're going to have journalists. We're going to have people getting interviewed. So all of that is going to happen. So we're going to position ourselves as an online media. And we launched a small subscription box on our existing training website and said, hey guys, in case you want to subscribe to the world's number one inspirational e-magazine, here's where you would drop your email ID. We're launching this newsletter the very next month. Then from the newsletter, we said, no, this is an e-magazine. So this is going to be a monthly edition of an e-magazine that's going to come out right into your inbox. And as we evolved for about 2.5 years like that, month after month, I realized that it was best. We made it online platform like Wikipedia with lots of articles and positive news and so many categories. And that's when we decided that we're going to go the blog style e-magazine. And that's how after about 20 months, in fact, we put iuemag.com in place. We bought a separate domain for media that we were publishing. And then that's how we became the online media. And that's when we decided now is the time to probably have a few IJs, the inspirational jockeys, as we call it, the inspirational journalists interchangeably. We use that term as IJs, RJs, there were VJs, there were MJs, but there were no IJs. So I said, we're going to have IJs, and very uniquely, people could be volunteering IJs or IJs because we at that point in time didn't have the budget to hire so many IJs. So we opened this position as volunteering IJs for so many people. People were were interested, they came forward. We're going to cover stories and we're going to write for you because this is a beautiful vision. And that's how we got a lot of support. And that's how the journey happened. And about 4 years ago, we opened the platform for media partnerships and online media partnerships with summits. And Brett, you would be happy to know that we are now partnered with over 400 summits from across 35 plus countries, some of the world's best summits. In fact, Sky Drone Technology, something like SkyTech from London, Big Data Summit from Malaysia, the Cafe Asia Summit in Singapore, the Women in Technology Summit in the US. So some such very wonderful summits we are partnered with at this point in time, as precisely now partnership status that these summits give us is online media partner. The dream well came true 7.5 years ago as a seed that started, you know, to today. And in fact, today, if any part of the world, people who are listening right now, if they go down and Google Inspirational E-Magazine, amongst the top three, or probably, I know I would not be wrong in making the claim that we are the number one link globally now. But day one, we had the tagline, the number one Inspirational E-Magazine. So that's something that sums up actually the story of our online media brand.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
So let's back up a little bit. You said you started in sales and marketing. How'd you go from sales and marketing into motivational speaking?
In the platform that I was working with for sales and marketing, it was an educational package that we were supposed to market. Much of the marketing took place by inviting a lot of people to a seminar and then educating them about the product and then letting them know the pros and cons of the product, how you use it, educating them about how other people have used it and stuff. And that's how the sales were actually conducted. So that kind of continuously week after week put me into a cycle of delivering those seminars, and then to keep a lot of my team members who were a part of my team who said, hey, listen, we're going to be a part of your team to sell this product as well, put me into a place where I would organize leadership workshops and motivational trainings for all of these people. And that's how, a period of 4 years with a lot of these kind of events conducted, I knew that there was an ability to deliver sales training to a lot of people that I had, and to be able to actually inspire them, give them leadership workshops. But I really didn't know that inspirational speaker is something I could have become at that point in time. But as I researched more on the internet, I found some of these amazing people doing a good job. You know, I heard about Tony Robbins and Shiv Khera and Robin Sharma and all of these people. When I read about Stephen Covey, you know, Brian Tracy, Zig Ziglar, I felt, you know, this is something I would love to pursue. I would love to deliver sales training to a lot of group of people, to companies, and inspire them towards higher performance levels and better leadership standards. And that's when I decided this is something I would love to have as a part of my life, but I didn't know this could be a livelihood or a career. And that's when I opened up channel into my network and passed a word out saying that if anyone's keen on having me, you know, deliver a particular workshop or a seminar or a leadership talk or a talk on any other particular agenda they might think could do justice, maybe they could discuss with me, and I would be happy to come down. Back then, I didn't have any professional charges for it because I didn't know if I could really charge for such gigs or this could be my career, because I said I was already into sales and marketing. So when I opened up, people kind of got interested that, okay, we would love to invite you. We would love to give a trial, because, you know, they knew that I wasn't really charging any money. So they were like, okay, we would love to experiment. If this goes great, we would love to invite you again, you know, and then maybe we could see how the whole thing can work out. We could organize a bigger gathering for you. So one after the other, I think those talks went really successful, the very initial talks that I delivered. And that's how the word of mouth kind of spread. And for almost over 3 years, Brett, you would be surprised to know that I never really charged for my inspirational talks, because I didn't know that those speaking gigs were something I could charge for. But yes, at the back of my mind, after a year of delivering these speeches, and also it was the same time when I had to move out of my earlier career, I knew that this could be a sound profession or a professional career for myself that I could really build, at least to start out with, because I knew I had to continue as an entrepreneur. That would be something I would pursue. What is that first product or service that I can offer to my customers or clients? Because there was no other skill set that I thought I could put together as a service that I could offer, because it was not like I was a technology developer or anything like that. So I knew that motivational speaking and delivering these workshops was my strongest skill set. So I put together a product around that, and I said, I'm more than willing to actually come forward and deliver these sessions. So that's how the shift from addressing a lot of those workshops and meetings for my business to now delivering it to people, because I thought this is something I could pursue for the long term, and I have the acumen and the knack for it. And the feedback that continuously came in that, yes, I was doing well, all of this moved me towards taking up motivational speaking as a career brand.
Cool. So what led you to writing your book, Life Simplified?
this is something I really love to answer, because I was dealing with so many complexities myself, and so many answers I was seeking. I was each time trying to understand, how do I deal with the situations I was being thrown at, from having my college years, getting involved into business early on, you know, not being able to manage my time for friends, family, having an imbalance rather, and then probably trying to understand, how do I get this so-called work-life balance, and which was pretty difficult for me. So I would always go this imbalance way and then find a new equilibrium. Also, all of these things. And then there were bigger questions like, should I follow my heart? Should I go the traditional way? Should I take up a job after my engineering is done? Should I take up a core technical job? Should I pursue higher education? So some of these questions at the back of my mind would keep lurking, despite the fact that I knew that I had to be an entrepreneur. The inclination was towards that. But these questions always, each time there were these times of doubts and times of concerns within me of what it is going to be next. And probably a lot of times when people would come to me and ask, how do I deal with this situations, or how do I resolve this particular challenge in my life? Besides the sales coaching, people would connect so deeply that they would even come down to me with their personal problems, even trying to understand if they're really working on their purpose or not, or probably if I could help them find their purpose in life, or just the way I figured sales and marketing and speaking could be something close and near and dear to me. They would always have these questions. How do I figure it out? Could you help me do it? So when I saw that these many things exist around me, these many people have challenges around what's the purpose of life? Why am I doing what am I doing? How do I figure out if I'm passionate about something? Am I interested in it? Or can I really get committed? Can I convert this into a career? I'm interested in music, but will I pay my bills? All of these things, plus the complexities I was dealing in my life, I think that brought me to actually write this book. But there's one more thing I would love to share. I was a non-reader, a perfect non-reader example until I turned about 18 or 18 and a half. I really had no interest in reading self-help books or probably any other books like novels or anything apart from the academic books. And hence, I thought that if I wrote a book that's really a thick, too many pages, too much of content, non-readers like me who are actually in such complexities and still would want to read some books and help themselves, but they would go down to these books and not be able to read because they just don't take to reading as well as the others do. So I decided I'm going to write a coffee table book, which is going to feel like a very wonderful conversation with the reader and make them feel very comfortable that, okay, it's totally okay if you are first a non-reader, second, have a complex life, third, have these questions about life, purpose, passion, and all the challenges. It's totally okay. I too had it, and this is how I resolved it. And much like the habit of reading that I had, that I would put a highlighter or underline a few of those most important quotes and sentences, I thought, why not do something like put up a lot of these quotes on an entire page in so many different pages so that whenever people pick up this book, especially the ones that are really influenced by this book, no matter what page they open, they have something to look back, take away as a memory, or probably just feel that kick and then move forward. So this book serves a daily inspirational dose for them. So this is how actually Life Simplified happened. And then I put the bracket that it's applicable for these young people who are making their way up from 14 to 28, and especially non-readers. So that's how Life Simplified happened, Brett.
Awesome. So we're coming to the end of our time together. One thing I like to ask my guests is to do a 1 minute of motivation. You can think of this as if you have a time machine and you're going back to your 8-year-old self and you want to convey the information needed to live a successful life, but you only have a minute. Or you can think of that as taking your entire life's message, purpose, and honing it down to a minute. So are you ready to go?
This is very, very exciting. Of course, I am ready to go. So maybe you could go 3, 2, 1 and tell me start, and then I'll go over it. But I really love this idea, Brett. I would have want to appreciate that.
All right, start.
All right. So one of the things that if I look back in my life and, you know, I would like to advise myself at the onset if I met, it would be if you really want to go very, very far in life and be very successful, you have to start really early. You cannot delay. I started at 18 and I still feel that was quite late. So I advise every single listener right now, no matter where you are, what you're doing, this is the best time to start working on yourself towards your goals, plan them out. Put a to-do list, put a to-be list for yourself, decide what you're really going to be or what you want to become, what kind of list you want to address, what kind of a bucket list you want to put for yourself for this one life, and start now. The second thing that I want to share is if there's any idea, any dream that you have, do not put it off for later. There should be just one mantra, and that is do it now. There shouldn't be, I'll do it next, I'll do it later, or probably this is an idea that's capital intensive for people who are wanting to start businesses. This is idea is capital intensive. I don't have support. I don't have people. I do not know if this is really going to work. Put all of those aside and say, do it now. The third thing that I want to share with everybody, one of the best things that really helped me inculcate so much of leadership abilities and talents was volunteering and helping people, because that just made me so comfortable, joyous, deeds that could not be paid back in cash or kind. This is something I would love to tell everyone. Corporate social responsibility is doing great. The world now needs individually socially responsible people. Individual social responsibility is on the radar. And I would sum it up saying that, hey guys, it's high time to realize we've been human beings for a very long time. It's time to become human doings. All of this is what I would tell myself, the earlier self that just started out. And this is something I have for all the listeners. I hope I will hear from you as human doings and not just being human beings. That's it, Brett.
Thank you so much, Sujit, for coming to my podcast. I really enjoyed listening to your story on how you created an inspirational online newspaper. Positive news is very needed in today's world, as in my humble opinion, there's a lot more positive things happening now than ever in the entirety of human history. And it's nice that somebody is out there pointing it out that, you know what? We are not that bad of a species as people like to point us out to be. So thank you for making a positive contribution in your community. And thank you for making this world a better place.
Thank you so much, Brett, for having me on your podcast. And in fact, I would really, really appreciate so many more people coming down to your podcast and sharing their stories. And I also appreciate the fact that you really believe that a positive media like this is so much needed. And I also appreciate the fact that you pointed out very rightly that there is more positive things than ever in the history that are happening, but so few actually come to the light. And we are very happy that we're working towards it. And I think podcasts like yourself are also a terrific impact, you know, much in alignment with creating positive content on the internet. Kudos to you too. And we will be very happy to share all of your podcasts or anything around your podcast that needs to be shared with all our readers. It'll be a pleasure for us to kind of partner you and take all of your podcasts as our content and then push it across to our readers so that so many more people could actually benefit from the kind of podcast you're creating, you know, because there's so much synergy between the kind of work we do. So thank you so much for having me on your show, Brett.
I appreciate that greatly. May your day be special.
Thank you. Wish you the same, Brett. Thank you so much.
And there you have it, folks. That was my interview with Sujit Lalwani. Isn't that cool? I love the idea of positive media. I think that's such a good idea. If you listen to my past interviews, if you have listened to my past podcasts, you have learned that I used to be very big in the law of attraction. And one thing I did enjoy, that Abraham, the being that has channeled through Esther Hicks, used to say that if you were to combine the positivity out in the world compared to the negativity out in the world, that put it all in a real hour newscast, the negativity out in the world would be that short. Because basically, another person mentioned, I forgot who it was, but the fact that all the negative things on the news are, it's good that they're on the news, is because they're still news and not so commonplace that we don't care about those things anymore. But a lot of times we can look at the world in a negative light and not notice the wonderful things that are out there. And let's be completely honest. If you truly looked at the past of human history, this is the best time to be alive. Yes, there is so much negativity out there. I know, I listen to a lot of it. You know, Nazis are coming back. Climate change is freaking scary. There's a lot of things in life that are scary, but if you look at the entire of human history, right now I am sitting in my apartment and I have zero fear that I am going to be murdered in my sleep by a roving band of raiders. That used to be commonplace. That used to be something that would just happen. It wouldn't even make the news if they had news back then. It would be, oh, Mongols sacked another village. What's the point? They sacked 15 yesterday. And I'm just pointing out the Mongols because they did a lot of sacking. It could be the Romans, anybody who would just go through, take away town. Or if you look at even modern history with colonization, as well as even look at the United States, where right now more people have access to education, more people have access to basic human rights. And there's so many people out there who are working to make this world a better place. And it's nice to have media that spotlights those people. And we need to spotlight them more. The people who are curing the diseases, the people who are creating the products that make our lives easier, the people out there who are helping the less fortunate, helping people go from homelessness, which is can be a helpless situation, into getting employed and becoming a functional member of society and getting that joy of being able to be, you know, work for yourself. I was a Toastmaster with somebody whose job was a social worker, and he helped a lot of people. In fact, one person he helped went from homelessness and nothing to making over five figures a month in less than a year. She actually came to him because she needed help budgeting because she did not know what to do with so much money. And it was because of the help he put in. And people like that need to be spotlighted or should be spotlighted. There's just so much positivity in them. So I'm thankful to people like Sujit, who is out there bringing out the positivity and bringing more joy into this world. Because that is one way we can change the world for the best, is joy. So you can connect with Sujit on Twitter at Sujit Lalwani, the Sujitlalwani. You can check out his positive media, IU, at www.iumag.com. Also, if you want your life to be simplified, you could check out his book, lifesimplified.com. And if you want to make Sujit's day, tweet at him on what you liked from what he shared or what I shared from this interview. Thank you so much for listening to the Joyous Expansion Podcast, episode 48. Super exciting to be that far along in my podcasting journey. Super excited if you have come along with me. I appreciate you so much. And if you want to ever email me, you may email me at bre2tsdupr2es@joyousexpansion.com. You can check me out at joyousexpansion.com, brettdupree.com. I'm just going to put that out there. You can also find me on Twitter at Joyous Expansion, Instagram at Joyous Expansion, and Facebook at Increase Your Joy. Bad SEO there. As always, I am Brett Dupree, your Joyous Expansion Life Coach, champion of authentic joy, and catalyst of transformation for the Church of Awesome, reminding you to be love, to be joy, to be awesome. Now play that jingle.
JoyousExpansion.com. JoyousExpansion.com. Come and say hello to Brett Dupree. He is an inspirational life coach. Good for you and good for me. He turned my life from gray to blue. I'm sure he'll do the same for you. Get in touch and you'll see your life will change dramatically. JoyousExpansion.com. JoyousExpansion.com. Yeah.